You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Jennifer Sontag, and we're going to talk about a time in her life when everything changed and she moved across the globe. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting, Jennifer Sontag. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am. Thank you, Amy, for having me.
Very good. Very, very good. And this is the second time. I have to remember, I have to add this to my checklist. We're doing a live lesson in Imperfect because I'm changing your name on the video while we do it. I did this in the last interview also. So you'll see. There, it's correct. All right. Imperfectly creating a show in real time. Okay. I have two warm-up questions that I kick off every conversation. What part of the world do you call home these days?
Lately, I am calling Sicily, Italy home.
All right. Now, we're going to come back to that, right?
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah. We're going to call it. Yes, exactly. We'll come back and talk. What is something that you enjoy or love about being in Sicily? Share with us something great about that.
Oh, right now I am loving the sunshine. I cannot get enough of the sun and even the wind. It's been incredibly windy here, but I love the weather.
I have not been, but I do want to go. All right. So sometimes in life, we make small changes. Other times, sometimes it can feel like everything is changing all at once. You shared in your idea for what to talk about today that there was a season of your life where you got divorced, you became an empty nester, and you changed careers. Everything changed all at once. How long ago was this, can I ask?
This was 2017, 2018.
All right, so that's 7 years, no, so six plus three, 10 years ago.
Nine
years ago. Okay, very good.
So we're getting, wow, we're almost to a decade of this.
Okay, all right.
So feels like yesterday.
Feels like yesterday, okay. So each of those by itself is like a major life shift. So there's that list that bounces around that's like, you know, major changes in your life, like, you know, and divorce and job change and moving, those are all in the top five. So my question here is, which of those three, was there a sequence? Like, did one come before the other, divorce, empty nesting, job change?
No, they kind of all happened at the same time. I had a medical situation, which sort of led to the demise of my marriage. At the same time, my son was graduating from university. My daughter was graduating from college. Literally everything was going on at the same time. And so how did it all shake out? The actual divorce was signed. My son launched, the divorce was signed, job changed. My daughter graduated. I don't know. They really kind of, no, that's not even right. They all happened at the same, literally all at the same time. It was,
that sounds like a lot.
An overachiever. Why do one when I could do it all?
I mean, it really does sound like a huge amount of pressure. And when you think back to, so it sounds like it was like a solid year of big upheaval and change. And you know, a lot of things going on. When you think back to that year, does it feel like that was like an abnormal amount of stress in your life?
I think it was an abnormal amount of stress in a community's life. It was a lot. And I say, you know, it's a lot for a community because I am a part of a community, right? It affected my parents. It affected my kids as they were launching. I had a 27-year-old son at that time who said I was abandoning him, even though he was getting married, because I had always been there, right? Okay. It affected my job because I was both going into a job and then deciding to leave a job. It was a lot.
Is there any part of your life that these events did not touch when you look back, or did it really touch everything?
No, it touched. I mean, it literally touched everything. It touched everything because, you know, when I was married, I was in Cleveland, even though I'm from St. Louis. And so divorces, I had only been in Cleveland for 4 years at that point. And so I moved back home. And then from moving back home to St. Louis, I ended up moving to Shanghai, China, which we'll hit on. But you know, it literally touched everything all the way down to my panties. It was
everything. That is, did you realize that everything was changing in the moment, or is it only when looking back?
No, only looking back. I mean, I think, you know, our brains are really, you know, just so protective in this way, right? That I was able to compartmentalize and not to say that I didn't have 500 breakdowns. But I was able to sort of compartmentalize and be able to focus on, okay, we just need to get through this, right? You know, my daughter's having a graduation in the middle of this. My son's having a wedding in the middle of, you know, so we have these joyous occasions that we're like trying to have in the middle of all of this. I don't think I realized what was there, because what I remember of the time is all of the fun I had. Don't remember how hard it was. Like, I have journals, and so I know it was hard because I've read the journals. I've got the receipts. So I know that I was feeling down at that point and that it was really hard, but I don't remember it.
You know, that's actually, I think that that's, I cut you off there because I was leaping forward with my thought. I think that's a very encouraging situation or description of 10 years out for people who might be in the audience at an earlier phase. Because I think that specific to divorce, the number of people that I've talked to who have been sort of in the middle of it, it's not uncommon that people will have the feeling of like, okay, it's never going to end. This is just, you know, this is my life of horror shows right now, you know? And so to hear that, that when looking back, it's like what you remember are the positive moments at that time. I think that is a beacon of hope for anybody who's in that spot at the moment. I think that's really, really good. So you have this really tough year. All of these things are changing. It sounds like there is a precursor event, like a health event that was even before it would. From an outsider, 10 years in the future, this sounds like a hurricane storm of all kind of things. You mentioned that you were in Cleveland, you move home to St. Louis. At some point, you decide to move to China as a part of all this change. Walk me through how that idea, because I can definitely track that I'm going home to St. Louis, but how did walk me through how the idea to go to China came up?
Yeah, so we think, you know, the idea to go to China, kind of a little quick backup. I was a very young single parent. And so I didn't have that year abroad. I didn't have that gap year. And I quite honestly never really traveled because I was a young single parent and I was also an entrepreneur. I didn't get married until my 30s. And so here I am back in St. Louis. I've changed my career. I don't really love it. My son's married. He owns a home. My daughter is taking her gap year. What am I doing? What am I doing with my life? And so when I was in Cleveland, as part of that change of career, I had went back to university. And during that time, my ex-husband, now ex-husband, was a university professor, and he had a chance to teach in China several times. And the last time I was not able to go, and I was still kind of a little bit bruised by that. So I thought, what the heck? You know what? I'm going to go to China and I'm going to go for a year. I'm going to just go teach English. What the heck? I've watched a YouTube video or two. How hard could it be?
Okay. So this begins as a do something for yourself that you hadn't had as much of an opportunity as you wanted to do before. And the initial thing was that you took a teaching job. Did you set this up before you left? Like you signed the contract, the job. Okay. And you were going to go for a year. All right. So that answers a lot of my questions. Random question. So you're in, you've gone through a big change in like living situation from Cleveland to St. Louis. when you were going to go for a year, were you, did you have a house, an apartment? Did you like put everything in storage? What did you do? Like, were you, like, did you go with a suitcase? Like, what was the planning for what you were leaving behind stuff wise?
So I was going to China for not even a year. I was going for 10 months. I was going to go for 1 year, take a gap year.
Like, but a school year.
Like a school year. And I was going to teach English. How hard could that be? Spoiler alert, I never actually taught English. The school ended up a scam. It was a whole disaster. Oh. But I ended up in China for 3 years. But when I went to China, my intention was China for 1 year as a bridge. I, at that point, had done so much therapy, had gone through all of these changes, right? And I thought, you know, life is still not right-sided up. There's something missing. And so what can I do, right? So I decided I'm going to China for a year, but I was not coming back to St. Okay. Louis. And I was probably not coming back to the US. I knew at that point that the times that I had went to Europe, I had the eat, pray, love bug. I was, let's just say it, I was going to La Dolce Vita it all day long. And I was going to move to Italy or Spain or Portugal. And I was going to have a big, fabulous life because you know what? I had worked my butt off for the last 25 something years. I had raised kids. I'd been through a divorce. I had a business. I was done, but I wasn't coming back. So I did let go of basically everything. I got rid of my house. I got rid of my car, got down to a couple of Rubbermaid totes, and I left with two suitcases. But China, I knew, was not my ultimate destination. That was a bridge. Sometimes, you know, and this is the business I do now, but you know, sometimes you have to make a baby step. And so for me, China was my baby step.
It's a pretty big step for a baby step. Okay, so that answers, that is, because that's a big thing. Like, you know, when you study abroad as a college student, right, that's a totally different level of stuff than when you go in your 30s and 40s if you've like built a family home. It's a different level of stuff. And that's why I asked that question. When I studied abroad, while I was in college, yeah, I did not own very much stuff at all, really, but it just all stayed in my dad's house, you know, like that's where, you know, I came back to the stuff that I left behind. And if I, you know, so that's why I was wondering about that. So you, but you downsized to nothing. You downsized and you left with two suitcases. And your plan was at that point to stay for a year. This is a little scary for people who might be thinking about doing things like this. You get there and what you thought was your job is a scam. So that's a part of the conversation that was not on my my question list. but you end up staying 3 years. This could probably be an entire novel or business book, but like how did you work that out on once you got there?
Yeah, so this was really the quick version is I got there. I was supposed to be teaching in what was described as a city called Suzhou. It was described as the Venice of China. It was not Venice, and it should not be referred to as that. Instead, I ended up in a condition where I was going to be sharing an apartment with a 21-year-old girl. That was the age of my daughter. So I'm quite familiar with that age. That wasn't a problem. I just didn't want responsibility for somebody else's child. So that was problem number one. Problem two, the living conditions were less than stellar. Then three, it turns out the visa that they brought me in on was illegal. They brought me in on a visa for a tourist, like as if I was coming to see a friend. Everything was written in Chinese, so I had no idea. These are the things you don't know that you don't know. Right. Then we went to the school and toured the school, took the route that we would normally take to school. I was originally told when I was back in the States, it would be 5 to 10 minutes. It would be a very simple walk. It's a small town, very easy. No, it is a city of 12 million. It is not a small town. It is a huge city. And I would have been on a bus for over an hour. So that wasn't going to work. Day four in, after arriving, jet lag has passed a little bit. I simply packed up my stuff, told the people, not going to happen. This is not what I signed up for. and you have me here under illegal premises. I want my passport back. I am leaving. I got on a train and I went to Shanghai. In
Okay.
Shanghai, I ended up networking very quickly, spending my entire weekend networking, and was able to secure a temporary job that was legal, and they would be able to switch my visa, my visitor visa, into a work visa. And so that stabilized me very quickly. From there, I ended up teaching business management, which is what I've done my whole life. I've been an entrepreneur and managed businesses. So that is how I stayed.
Wow.
But yeah, it took a little bit to get me there.
That's quite the surprise. I mean, you know, so it's quite the surprise to arrive there and find out that the premise that you arrived under is not, you know, really what it was. It's very similar to arriving at like an Airbnb and the, you know, it's like, oh, this does not look like the picture. It's just much more serious.
Exactly. I think that is one of the hardest things when, you know, we're women of a certain age and we know a lot. And so we try to trust ourselves and we try to quell that little voice in the pit of our stomach that says, should you be doing this? It's like, no, we're just going to try something new, you know, but we know.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting because a lot of, you know, I want to think that everything, I can still do all the things at 52 that I did when I was 24, right? But there are some things that are definitely designed for people in different seasons of their life. So like if I tried to do study abroad like I had done when I was 21, I would be very unhappy with the living conditions, because not that I couldn't do it or decide to do it, but like you're saying, I have changed my expectations. I actually, I have a kid who's in their mid-20s who wanted me to go with her and her friends to a music festival. It's camping. And I liked all kinds of things about it. And I actually quite enjoy camping. But I finally was like, you know what? I actually don't want to do this. Like, I was like, you know.
And music festival are two different things, right?
Right. I would like to, I was like, I would, you know, it's like, I, you know, it's because days and days and all the music and all the things. And then, you know, just, it's, I was like, oh, you know, I like the idea of it, but I have to really, I'm going to listen to myself that I don't want to be grimy for that number of days, and hot and dusty. And, you know, and she loves these things about it. You know, so, but I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to pick the three bands on this roster and find places that I can just go see that concert, hopefully in a chair, you know, or an air conditioned suite.
And I think that's how I ended up making my pivot, right? So I went from that 20-year-old job of teaching English to networking and finding out that I'm well overqualified for that. And I should be teaching subject matter, and I should be teaching the international school, and my students, you know, would be going on to Harvard, to Yale, to London School of Economics. That was where I needed to be teaching. Right, I could get the experience, right? So I could get that music festival experience, but I could get it in a more intimate way.
Yes, very good.
And so that's how I made that pivot. But had I not, I think, just made that first bold move, to just rip off the bandaid and go to China, right? And go for something that I knew wasn't exactly quite right, I would have never have ended up there, because there aren't YouTube videos. There aren't people out there promoting what I did. And there's a whole lot of us out there in our 40s and 50s that are teaching abroad around the world in IB level schools. We're not just teaching English, we're teaching science, we're teaching math, we're teaching computer robotics, we're teaching engineering, economics, like I did, right? But we're not living the broke young student life with the broken furniture. You know, I was living in my apartment in Shanghai, was $2,500 USD a month.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. It had a big terrace, right? Like, I was not living with Brittany, the 21-year-old.
Right.
That was not for,
no,
that
I,
was
I
not
mean,
for.
You know, and I think there's a hidden, like, broader sort of point that is very frequently true in what you just said. A lot of times, so the the phrase is like, you can't see the safety net till you jump, but that's sort of nerve wracking to think about. But the other way is a lot of times you can't understand a situation until you take that next step. So it's like if you're I'll use a really basic example, and very U.S. centered, but you were in the U.S., so you'll probably still remember. National parks give terrible advice for what is happening like inside the parks. It's like really, really hard to actually plan a full agenda. It's this crazy thing because you like wanted, it's like a huge thing and you want to plan all the stuff. And for whatever reason, wonderful people, never met a park ranger I didn't like, but they're not the best at telling you, you know, all of the things. It's like you have to go and get there and then you're like, ah, this is what they're talking about of why I need to be here at 7:30 for the Narrows. You know, it's like, but if you stay at home trying to figure it out, you'll never get there because there's a piece missing, which is that you actually have to be there to get the information that you need. And I think that shows up in a lot of places, like, you know, somebody trying to give you directions inside for where to find the produce department in the store when you're not in the store doesn't make as much sense as when you're together in that same space.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, we see this all the time as my journey has progressed, right? Like each thing that I have done, and I'm getting better at starting to read those cues and starting to look down the path and go, okay, right? Because I think we get lazy in the US. I get lazy because I know the script. I know the steps. I know that, you know, this job title means this, you know, this role is that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you use the same terminology else, it could have completely different meaning.
100%. 100%. So question, although I think I probably know the answer. Did you ever return ticket when you left for the first time to, you thought you were going for a school year? Did you have a return ticket to come back?
No.
Yeah. All right. So, and then did you stay 3 years like pretty much nonstop, or did you come back to the US in between in somewhere in there for like, you know, family events, weddings, stuff like that?
Yes. When I got there, I came back for vacations and I arrived, and then we had this little thing happen called COVID.
Mm.
and so then I didn't visit for a while. But in between there, my last visit to the US was to actually have brain surgery because I had a little slip and fall while I was in China. And so I popped back into the US to have a little brain surgery and then flew back into China as it was closing and COVID was exploding.
Wow.
So we spent all of 2020 in China, which was really kind of wild to see the difference, because China ended up, you know, this was prior to the vaccines. We ended up being locked in Shanghai, but it's a huge city of 24 million people. We were back in classrooms by early May. We were back in classrooms. We were going to brunch. We were doing all these things as the US was just shutting down, as Europe was just. So it was this very surreal existence for about a year.
Right. It's been a while since I thought about this. One of the ways that China handled it was that it was very closed to get in and out of China during lockdown. So it was like like New Zealand and Australia. It was one of the ways that they were keeping life regular-ish inside, because it was like, you know, we're just, you know, if we follow the rules, we don't have the porous border. Is that right? Okay. So yeah. And was such a crazy time to be alive and watching it, which, you know, so this is 6 years since lockdown in the States. And it is interesting to me how many of the conversations I have still tie back to shifts that people made as a result of those once in a lifetime experiences or circumstances. All right. So you mentioned in your pitch, and I'm very curious about this, that you, when you first went to China, you had $14,000 and no plan. And that's not a lot of money. So was there pressure? Like, so you went with the job that was the English teacher, which would not have been, I've never done it, but I've known, I was 20 like everybody, and I knew a bunch of people who did do that in a variety of places, not highly paid. If you would have done that, but was there pressure for you to like figure it out and make some money, you know, in order to be able to live while you were there?
No. So I had 14,000 liquid. If I wanted to liquidate, it would have been a pain in the behind, you know, because I'm kind of at that weird age of you can't touch things without paying big
Okay.
tax things. So yeah, I could have made that happen, but you know, just coming out of a divorce, I walked away from my divorce. I left the house. I left everything. And so I did have to make it work, but I think the pressure was bigger in the US that I had to make it work because of the cost of living.
Okay.
In the US, I had to have a car, I had to have car insurance, I had to have health insurance, co-pays, deductibles, blah, 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 blah. In China, they were going to provide me an apartment and pay me USD 12,000 a year. I already had a little bit of cash, cost of living in the Venice of China, Suzhou. Was going to be nothing. I was going to be making money hand over fist, right? No. I have no idea. I never actually had to live on that amount.
Okay.
The job I ended up with after day four, my income was USD 60,000, and it included an apartment both at the school and in the city, and it was tax free.
Wow.
So it was a pretty good it was a
Yeah.
pretty good deal. Consider my cost of living was maybe about 15 to 20,000 on the high end per
Yeah.
year. I was
Yeah.
taking pretty nice 2 month vacations every summer. I
Wow.
kind of miss it. Yeah, I had 2 months every summer and 1 month every winter.
Yeah, because
So.
I guess it was tied to a school calendar. That is really amazing. All right, so before you left, you were curious about China. You had this opportunity for China. You knew that it was you wanted it to be your bridge year, and your plan was for your Dolce Vita experience in Western Europe. You end up in Shanghai for 3 years. How do and today you live between Italy and Spain. Like, so you mentioned that right now you're in Sicily, but you actually live between Italy and Spain. I have to admit, it does sound very romantic, and delightful. And I just hope that it's as delightful for you to live it as it is in my imagination. So walk us through the sort of, the highlights of how you got from Shanghai to where you are now, which is Italy and Spain.
Sure. So very quickly after I moved to Shanghai, I got involved in different expat groups. If you are watching this, you can see that I am not Chinese and I stand out like a sore thumb. I'm tall, I have bright white hair, and I have very white skin. So I was not going to immediately fit into the local culture and the local society. My Mandarin is also terrible. So I started going to expat groups and getting involved in expat groups. About 3 months in, I was at a French hamburger restaurant for an Italian-hosted international brunch, Internations brunch, where I met a Spaniard. And we ended up, you know, striking up a conversation. Months and months went on. We kind of laugh about this. I always tease him a little bit that we were dating and I didn't know we were dating. I thought we were just friends hanging out. Because he thought I was shy. I thought he was shy. Nobody made a move, but we ended up as a couple. And so he is Spanish. He had just arrived in Shanghai 3 days before we met on a 5-year job contract. And so his plan was to stay 5 years. My plan was to leave about 8 months after we left, after we met. And so for me, it was going to be a short, here's a nice little international fling, I'm out of here kind of thing. I got back from my summer vacation to pack up my things and move on to my next place, which was going to be Europe. And I decided I couldn't leave them. And so I stayed.
All right.
Yeah.
You stayed in Shanghai, and then the two of you. So does he stay? So and then you do go. You move to Europe. Does he stay his full 5 years, and then meet you a couple years later, or you guys came together?
No, we came together. So once COVID started, we had already, you know, we've already stayed now. I had the head injury. I came back into Shanghai just after brain surgery because of his job. And so I continued my job, or I thought I was continuing my job. They actually fired all of us, all of the English staff, English speaking staff, they fired all of us. So I had to scramble and find a different job. which I ended up finding a really fantastic job that I loved. But his contract was continuing on. However, by about mid-October of 2020, the tension in Shanghai had become too much. As a foreigner, as an American, the rhetoric was getting really tough. And so there was a lot of discrimination in our housing and my job that led to me losing my job. Or we had to move housing, things like that. So he was able to work with his employer and bring us back to Spain. And so
that's how you got to Spain.
That's how we got to Spain. We arrived in Spain on Christmas Day of 2020.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Do you ever stop and wonder what your life would look like today if you had not made the decision to take the teaching job and fly to China?
Yes. Yes. And actually, just last week, I was back in St. Louis visiting my dad. And we drove past my old house. And of course, I saw a lot of my old friends and things. And I think my life there would be much like it was when I left in 2017, 2018. I mean, I adore my friends. I love my family, but they're in the same place they were 8, 9 years ago. Nothing's changed. They're just doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, that's not for me. That's great. I'm just not somebody who wants that level of consistency, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think there's huge pressure in social groups and friend groups and families to need to justify that we like the lifestyles that we choose. And I think that's unfair because plenty of people love, I mean, this is such a like common thing that it shows up in rom-coms, right? There are plenty of people who it is the life of their dreams to live in one house their entire life and have a very robust, super local community. And there are other people who don't choose that. And I don't think it does any of us any favors to feel like we have to justify or say one is better than the other or anything like that. It's I think it should be more okay to just be like, I know this about myself, that this is not what I want to do. And it's not, in saying that, is not a statement about anything anybody else is choosing to love.
And I think that's the thing, right? And I think we each go through different phases because 5 years earlier, before I had left, I fancied myself as a little, you know, suburban farmer.
Yeah.
I had my now ex-husband dig out my front lawn and I learned how to garden and raise tomatoes and all of this stuff because at that stage, what I wanted, right? My daughter's in high school. My son had just started university. I wanted that nesting because that was at the point where I was late to get married. And so that was perfect for that phase of my life. The next phase, I was ready for something different.
Yeah. No, I hear that.
Okay.
I definitely will say, like, I mean, it is, I've talked to a variety of people who have different relationships with the different styles of raising kids. So like, I've talked to people who, you know, take their kids on the road and they travel with their kids, and I've talked to other people. But the thing that I think definitely I would say across the board, having young kids in school or like it impacts the decision you make. It impacts your choices, like it, love it or hate it. Like it does come up. Okay. So today actually you work with people helping them on their own expat experiences and journeys. I'm going to ask you, this might be a terrible question. In every interview, I ask a question that I'm just unsure if it's a good question. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it's a crappy question. Can you think of one common generalization that you've seen over the years with people going through this expat process? What is one thing that people sometimes underestimate for what will be, how challenging it will be in the process of becoming an expat?
Okay. So this is going to be American centric because this is primarily, this is who I work with. This is who I am.
Okay.
I am part of this group. And I was this person at one point. We underestimate as Americans how much the rest of the world wants us.
How much they want us? Say more. Tell me more what that means.
We underestimate how easy we think the process is to move, because we hear that it's very easy to change countries, that you can just cross a border and you can just walk right in, right? And so for some reason, and I was guilty of this too, I thought, oh, okay, immigrating is not that big of a deal. Like, you show the passport, like, okay, I just go get this visa thing, right? I didn't know what a visa was. I had never gotten a visa before in my life. I'm like, I go get this visa thing. They stick it in my passport, who, you know, take a little ride to Chicago, get this thing from the consulate. All right, great, right? So what do I end up with? I end up with a visa that's for illegal reasons, right? Yeah. So because I didn't understand how serious and how difficult and precise this immigration process is, that there is a protocol, there is a very legal structure you should go through, and there is a seriousness to it.
Yeah.
I didn't take this. And I deal with men and women all day long from all walks of life. And I would say 9 times out of 10, these ideas come from my American clients.
Yeah.
That it's going to be easier than it is, right? We just don't realize, because we've never done it, right?
Well, it shows up. Yeah, no. And it shows up when people say, oh, if you don't like it, just leave, you know, like with political discussions. And it's funny because, like, my current mindset is, for whatever reason, that it's actually quite complicated and very detailed. In the news this week, we're recording this in February, a bunch of people who are in the process in Italy are living through in real time the rules are changing. People who are trying to follow the rules are caught in what's this going to be for me? So I think that's a very, very helpful thing for people to keep in mind. And I think that's a really good one. I'm glad that I asked it. The name of your company today is Viamond. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes and the YouTube description. For everybody who's in the audience, the easiest way to get these links is to be a part of the email community for imperfectadulting.com. That's my plug to join the list. Everybody should. Tell us about what you do at Viamond, and so that people know what it is that that happens there and how you help people with the expat process.
Sure. So you can find us. I just have to point this out. We are Viamonde EU.
Yes.
.eu. Because otherwise you'll end up on a ski website, which skiing is fun, but that's not us.
Okay. All right. Very good. Good tip. Good tip. It's not .com. It's .eu. Very good.
Right. So we are a relocation agency, and we help people who are at that change of their life where they're saying, I'm ready for something different. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I know there are some things I don't know, and I want to get guided on this. I want to get some guidance. I want to educate myself on this. And then when I'm ready, I want help. So I took my experience along with my Spanish partner, who happens to be an immigration attorney.
Helpful.
He is duly licensed in Spain and Italy. Very helpful. I went through the process to become recognized as an Italian citizen. My great grandparents were from Italy. This is under the old rules, which may become the new rules again, or the restored rules. Who knows? There's a lot of changes going on. But originally, we started out just helping people reclaim their Italian citizenship by descent from their family that had left Italy years earlier. And as I was doing this process over the years, right, more and more people were now, you know, at that point approaching 100 people that I had helped. They had their Italian passport, which opened up 27 countries. And so now they're coming to me saying, Jennifer, I want to move to Spain. I want to move to France. How do I do that? I don't know how to do that. Let me call Guillermo. Guillermo, do you have a friend in France? Do you know a lawyer over here? Do you know this? And so we just started organically building this around our clients. So at this time, as of February 2026, right, we help descendants of Italian citizens become Italian, become recognized as Italian. We help people whose line, who their their ancestral line may be affected, get visas, whether it's elective residency, digital nomad, investment visas, buy houses, come back and find their family. And we also do the same things in Spain. Spain, similar program, you can move. And if, especially if you're from a Latin American country, you can claim Spanish citizenship in 2 years, but also they have an elective a passive income, non-lucrative visa for people that are retired or have about 30,000 euros in a bank account, digital nomad visa. They no longer have an investor visa, but they have some other vehicles. And so our goal is really, you know, we go where our clients are, because I know with me, as I said very early in the show, right now I live in Sicily. I don't know where that will be in the future. I am a nomad at heart. I've lived in over 100 homes. I've only lived in about 4 countries, but I've lived in a lot of places within the US. And so there's always going to be somewhere new. And so our journey follows my journey and it follows our client's journey. So as our clients say, we want to do this, well, then we find the experts, we employ them, we bring them under our umbrella, and we help our clients achieve that.
Very nice. Very nice. It's a hot topic. So I don't know if you're a football fan, but we had the Super Bowl last week. And the halftime artist was Puerto Rican. So we had a national discussion on what type of territory Puerto Rico is, which has been very interesting to hear what people think and know. And then also, the discussion that comes up every once in a while that the reason people speak Spanish in some places ties back to colonization, which you hit on, because it's like if you are somebody in a Latin American country, you might have a tie to Spain. So that's my long-winded version of drawing those dots for the conversation that crosses the ocean. Very, very cool. Jennifer, are you ready to wrap this up with my final 3 questions?
That sounds great.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. All right. So when I lived in Europe, it was before Google Translate. So in addition to being on a student budget, one of my common frustrations was occasionally I would order food in a situation and be completely surprised by what was delivered to me versus what I thought I had ordered. So the question is, what is the, in all of your travels, what is the most surprising thing that you have either eaten or been offered as you have gone around?
Probably the most surprising, and I don't actually recall if I ended up eating it, was I ordered what I thought was duck, and it turned out to be this thing on a, it looked like a penis. I don't know what it was.
Something tongue, called, like, probably. Gooey.
It was Asian. I was in Asia, and I have a picture of the chef holding what looks like something ready for a porn stand-in. Yes.
That's so funny. That's such a good answer. I just snorted. That's so funny. The first thing that came to mind when you said that was like cow tongue, which is like a thing that if you've ever seen anybody cook it, it's like a very bizarre looking cut of meat, but it literally could have been anything that they were offering to you. So that's so funny. That's so funny. That's such a great answer. All right. Very cool. All right. The next question is very serious and super realistic. If time travel was real, and you could go back in your timeline to like middle school, would you do it?
Oh. No.
All right, very good. Good. No on the middle school.
My hair was great. If I could get my hair back. But no.
That's right. You could get the youth in the hair for sure. All right, very cool. All right, so I know you're a busy person, but if you have a day off with no deadlines, no chores around the house, no meetings that anybody's scheduled for you, share with us how you might choose to relax. Like, would I find you reading a book, watching TV or movies, listening to music, going to a museum, exercising in nature? What would you do on a day off when your goal is to just relax?
So what I like doing right now for my days off to relax is huge walks. And I live along the sea, and where I live, every, I don't know, couple hundred meters, there are benches that are built to look like books, big giant books. And my sight has gotten so bad I can't read anymore, but I do have Audibles and Apple Books. So I go and take a really big walk, get myself really as tired as possible, big bottle of water, and I just sit and listen to the book, look at the sea, sit there for a half hour, 45 minutes, and then walk some more. That
Fantastic.
it gives me time to think. It gets me in nature. And usually, depending on what I'm reading, it's either a bit of enjoyment or I'm learning something new. So it's kind of my perfect day.
That is a fantastic answer. I love it. That's it. Jennifer Sontag, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy. So nice to be on here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off.